Today on Movie Wellers, we talk about Mockingjay, Part 2, and The Secret in Their Eyes. It's time for Movie Wellers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Wellers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hi. I think we should repeat the conversation that we just had about Mockingjay, because it's so confusing.
Right.
It's Mockingjay.
Well, it's the fourth film.
Fourth film in a trilogy of books.
Right, based on
but three books. But it's part two.
Of the third book.
So it's the third book, the second part.
Second part of the third
book. But the fourth movie.
And the fourth film. Whose idea was that?
I know.
It is all of Hollywood, with their greed.
I know. And we've said time and time again, this was not the one to split into two.
Yes.
But before we get into the review of that, let's do our regular weekly pick of things on Netflix. I can't find anything on Netflix. So, guys, what's in your Netflix queue that you think other people should be watching this week?
Well, this is one I've watched time and time again. It is in my documentary loving fashion. It's called Woody Allen, a Documentary. So
really?
It is. Yes,
that's what it's called.
Yes, okay. It's called Woody Allen, a Documentary.
What is it about? I'm sorry.
Yeah. The suffragettes. No. It's a really in-depth look at the life and contribution to film of Woody Allen. And I'm a huge Woody Allen film. All of you who know Movie Wallers know that. So I am a little bit biased, but it's just a lovely documentary. And it's kind of historical as well about movie.
It's a two-parter, right? It was on KPBS.
It was a KPBS two-parter, but the documentary itself is one documentary.
Okay. Yes, Dee.
My recommendation this week, continuing with my trend of recommending foreign films,
we're so stuck in a rut.
Yes, as we move around the world, today we are going to land in Italy, and I'm going to recommend the movie I Am Love. And if you haven't seen it, this is easily one of the most gorgeous movies ever made. It's just opulent and gorgeous and luscious. And it features an absolute tour de force performance by Tilda Swinton, who we all love. And I honestly don't think there's anybody else on planet Earth who could play this character.
And she speaks Italian.
More than that, she speaks Italian with a Russian accent. So she plays a woman from Russia who has immigrated to Italy and married very well into one of these old, very wealthy Italian families.
Like the Medicis.
And she's this very cultured, beautiful woman who speaks Italian. And the movie's entirely in Italian, but she speaks Italian with a Russian accent. And it's about this woman. It's about this woman who has three grown sons, and she's part of a big, you know, big, very traditional Italian family. And the movie starts during the holidays, and it's about her starting to realize that she's falling in love with her son's best friend. And, you know, and the movie kind of really is strong, and it's beautifully made, and it's about the choices you pay. I mean, the prices you pay by the choices you make. And she's faced with this big dilemma of, does she find the true love and leave everything that's defined her for the last 30 years, or stay shackled? Remind you of a movie we spoke about in our last podcast, which was Brooklyn, but this is just a gorgeously made movie. I'm sorry I'm saying so much about it. It's called I Am Love, and the same director of the movie is coming out with another movie called A Bigger Splash, which is going to open in 2 months, and it has Dakota Johnson, Tilda Swinton, Ralph Fiennes, and Matthew Shonalds,
wow.
And it's supposed to be great. So, as a preface to that, go watch I Am Love.
Lovely, lovely recommendation. Yes, I love that movie. And the costumes are stunning.
Yes.
Beautiful clothing. If you're into fashion, stunning clothing.
Yes. Kind of reminds me a little bit of The Great Beauty.
Yeah. It's not as quirky. No quirk.
But visually, it's just as
beautiful.
Good.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Tilda Swinton, you had me at Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Terrific. My pick is a documentary. It's a slightly benign pick. It's a movie called Chasing Ice. This movie was released in 2012, and it's controversial in some senses that, you know, it's very much got a slightly preachy message about climate change. But the reason I'm recommending this simply is how beautiful some of the cinematography is in this movie. You know, it's put together by a photographer by the name of James Balog, and, you know, he uses time-lapse and he uses, you know, his extreme skills as a photographer to, you know, depict what he believes is going on with respect to climate change in the Arctic. You know, you may or may not believe in the climate change premise. You know, I, for one, you know, have some belief in those issues. But regardless of that, if you want to just look at some breathtaking photography, slightly National Geographic-y in its content. It's not a very long film. It's an hour and 15 minutes, but it won't be a waste of your time. It's absolutely stunningly, breathtakingly beautiful. So, Chasing Ice. And Rashmi, you had
Woody Allen, a documentary.
And Yazdi, you had
I Am Love.
I Am Love with Tilda Swinton. Terrific.
All streaming on Netflix.
So when you're not listening to Movie Wildlife or at the movies, three movies to check out. Okay. Two reviews this week. Mockingjay. Part 2. Should we start with that?
Yes. So Mockingjay Part 2 is directed by Francis Lawrence, who looks remarkably like Bradley Cooper, but I digress. Francis Lawrence directed 3 out of the 4 movies in the Mockingjay, in the Hunger Games franchise. In fact, except for the first one, he's directed the last 3, and obviously he returns to wrap things up in the second part of the third book. And it's essentially an escalation of the war in Panem, where the different districts have had enough against the capital, and it's obviously our very young Katniss is pulled in the middle of it, and once again she has to fight not just for herself but for the entire Panem. And the movie stars, you know, characters we've known from before. Jennifer Lawrence stars as Katniss. Josh Hutcherson is there, as is Liam Hemsworth. And, of course, there is a who's who of, you know, great acting royalty here. Julianne Moore is here. Philip Seymour Hoffman is here. Jeffrey Wright is here. Woody Harrelson's here. Who else am I missing? So it's the usual people. It's the wrapping up of the franchise. Was it apt? And was it aptly done, Joe?
So I was always going to struggle with this because Mockingjay was my least favorite book in the trilogy. I think, you know, as we've said before, you know, this is not the book if you were going to pick a book to split into two. And so consequently, I think it does suffer a little bit in the sense of this story really plods. I think the first 2/3 of the movie for me were a little bit of a drudge, and overall, you know, the conclusion does come, you know, to the story, and I think it's reasonably satisfying. Although I've got a few things I want to talk about in terms of, you know, how this heroine ends up ultimately. I mean, for a character as strong as Katniss Everdeen, she was disposed of in such a benign way at the end of it all. So
really?
Yeah, I'm gonna ring the spoiler alarm after we finish the review and just have. Wax lyrical about some opinions there. But overall, you know, it's what you expect. There is nothing surprising about this particular one, and it's probably my least favorite move of the entire franchise.
Yeah, I wasn't looking forward to this one because I didn't love the last one, but I was pleasantly surprised by it. I didn't hate it. It's not bad, but thank God it's all over now.
Yeah, I mean, as beloved as these books are, and we all love the books, I mean, I started reading it kicking and screaming because, you know, I didn't want to read some teen fiction. And then I was completely, I read them all. I mean, I read them like literally back to back on weekends. So as beloved as these characters are, I think it was really a disservice to kind of drag it out like this. They should have really stuck with the 3 movies. You know, it was done well with Harry Potter, but yeah, you can feel that it's been stretched out. Having said that, the movie's fairly engaging. It's not shoddy. It's not badly made.
It's not lazy.
It's not lazy. I mean, in the moment, it was very engaging. The last half hour was pretty good. It was pretty tense. And I think some of the I don't know, is this PG? Some of the stuff might
PG-13.
PG-13. Some of the stuff in there might be too intense for the little wee ones, so just a word of warning. And as much, we will talk about this at the end, but the movie had like, it didn't have the class to just end when it should. It just kept dragging. I mean, the movie has about 46 endings. It really does. I was like, come on, end it. It's over, it's over. And then another scene plays out, and another scene plays out, and another scene. It's like, come on. So it's not horrible, but could do better.
And that's the thing. I mean, I think if this had been, in fact, what needs to happen here is that we need to take Mockingjay Part 1 and 2, cut out the cruft, and you'll end up with a pretty tight, reasonably exciting, and very satisfying finale to the trilogy. It's just this decision to make it, you know, a five-hour-long finale from a book that was also a little bit of a, you know, a slower book than the rest of the series. I think it was just commercially, you know, it was a pure commercial decision, and I think artistically they've really dropped the ball here.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a shame to see it fizzle out.
Yeah, I think. And also the time between the two was too long. Like, if you're going to split a book in two, do it quickly, especially because you filmed the movie
together. But I think it came out like in two consecutive years, right?
But really,
you know, you want the Back to the Future kind of, you know, release in 3 months apart. Wait?
You know, I think the problem I had is this played more like an action horror film than the end of a trilogy, which is like a big climax. With too many gotcha moments. I don't know if you guys had that. It's also teenage and broody with Katniss and Peter. And I hated the last 2 minutes like you, Joe, both of the book and of the movie.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about this. This is exactly what it says on the tin, right? This is Mockingjay Part 2. You will see this if you've seen Part 1 and you want to see how it ends. And so I think it's going to do very well commercially. I don't necessarily feel like the success of this movie is contingent upon any kind of a review. I mean, you're either invested in this and need to see it finish or not. It's still a good time in Suzanne Collins' universe. I mean, the one thing that I did like about the movie here is that, you know, despite the fact that the games are over, the games never seem to end.
Correct, yeah.
And, you know, the kind of the political and war movie elements of this one were the kind of the overarching themes here. Whereas I think, you know, what I really liked about Hunger Games 1 and 2 was the metaphorical aspect of the games rather than the, you know, the actual games themselves. So, you know, there's some notable, you know, conclusions to that kind of arc here. But again, Not a lot to say here about this one. I mean, yeah. In fact, you could probably go back and listen to our review for Mockingjay Part 1, and it really is just an extension of that.
I mean, it taps on some of the things which are in the book, which are kind of interesting, which is that very often when an evil regime is toppled, the one that takes over necessarily, in order to having toppled it, have to themselves have been slightly evil. And so, you know, the people sometimes are replaced by another tyrant. And, you know, you see that in the real world, in real politics all the time. And that's in the book as well. And there's a few things which are interesting.
See, that's a lost opportunity to me. Yeah. Like, I wish that they had diverged from the book in that sense and really explored that concept. Because that's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Right? And very current.
And very current, exactly, of what's going on around the world. I think the bigger problem I had... And look, this is nothing against Jennifer Lawrence because she is so much the embodiment of Katniss. But this really is the Jennifer Lawrence show. I mean, everyone else just kind of, you know, falls to the wayside. And poor Woody Harrelson gets maybe, what, all of three lines. Elizabeth Banks gets maybe one and a half. I mean, you know, it's
although
just...
I was happy to see them all.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it would have been sad if we didn't see them, of course, but...
Yeah, I mean, they were just brought in. I mean, Stanley Tucci was brought in, I think, and Elizabeth Banks, just to, like, give us a sense of, there they are. But I don't think they don't add to the story. They're just there to tell us, hey, hi.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, anything else to say on this one?
Nope.
Okay, yes, you go first.
A very generous 6 out of 10. If you're vested in this, go see it. It's engaging, but whatever.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, after the movie magic that was Catching Fire, this whole Mockingjay episode has just been, you know, like I say, it's almost like the series has tapered down and fizzled out. So, you know, instead of getting fireworks at the end, it kind of snuffs out, which is a shame because I think this is a very good trilogy. I mean, I think of all the young adult dystopian themes out there right now, this has been by far the strongest. So I'm going to give it a 6. It's a stingy 6. I think I enjoyed the movie a little better than the 6 suggests, but 6 nonetheless.
I agree with you both. Number 2 remains my favorite. And to be honest, I'm just happy we're done with this. 6 out of 10.
So I'm just going to ring the spoiler bell. Ding, 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 ding. Do skip over this if you've not seen the movie. But
I don't think there's much to spoil, Joe. I'm not being funny, but...
So I think this is maybe a criticism of the book more than it is the film, but I really wish they'd left the last scene alone.
I agree.
For a heroine as strong as Katniss to then...
With the baby in the field?
Yeah. To become such a pedestrian, you know, female, I guess all... Women heroes need to have babies and families, and you know that's the way that they need to end up in order to be happy. Just thought it was such a jarring visual to end the series with that I just really wish that they had been bold enough to deviate from the book enough to drop that, because it was horrible.
It was unnecessary.
Unnecessary epilogue.
I'm usually offended by these things, but I wasn't. I didn't even think about it until you brought it up. But I did feel like the movie should have ended 15 minutes before it did. Come on, you know, it's done. It's done. You know, move on. And there was another scene. I'm repeating myself, talking about how the movie repeats itself, so I won't do it.
All right, so let's move on. Movie number 2 of the week is The Secret in Their Eyes.
Okay, so I have the intro one, and yes, he's the only one that's seen this one of us. So a tight-knit team of rising investigators along with their supervisor is suddenly torn apart when they discover that one of their own teenage daughters has been brutally murdered. This has an incredible cast, including Chiwetel Ejiofor, Nicole Kidman, Julia Roberts, all Oscar nominees or winners. So this is directed by Billy Ray, and it's written by Billy Ray and Juan Jose Campanella.
Yes. Now, can I just add that this movie was a remake of an Oscar-winning
foreign
language movie from
2010.
Ojos. Okay, sorry, I butchered that so badly.
The Secret in Their Eggs.
El Secreto de Huevos.
El Secreto de...
Huevos Rancheros. No, we're being racist now. So, it was a remake of a Latin American movie from 2010, and that movie did very well. We didn't see that one.
Did you see that one yesterday?
It's not on Netflix, which I was...
It used to be.
I was scrambling hard to find it, because I think I remember it being in my queue at one point. So yeah. Boo to me for not watching it.
So yes, the watch? I don't know. I was kind of worried about this one.
So I saw the original one. I think I don't know if I saw it on Netflix or I might have seen it in the theaters, but I really liked it. It has Ricardo Darín, who is this Argentinian actor who we all love. And that movie is very unique because it's set at a particular time in the history of that country. And, you know, it kind of, the story kind of ties in very well with that. And, you know, like all good thrillers, it has twists and turns and you really don't see them coming. And it plays very nicely with morality, because sometimes it agrees with it and sometimes it goes against, you know, your expected, you know, moral expectation in terms of how the story should turn out. So it did a really fine job with that. Considering all of that, trying to make a Hollywood adaptation of it with pretty A-list, you know, Hollywood actors like Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman and Chiwetel Ejiofor, while still retaining kind of the tone of that movie is a tall order. So considering all of those things, the movie does not do a terrible job. I think one thing that they intentionally did, and I think they did it only because that was the only way Roberts would have signed up to play the role, is they kind of switched, you know, the murder in the movie happens from one of the lead characters' his wife. In this movie, it happens to Julia Roberts' daughter. And so... I don't know. I think it seems like a strange thing to change in the movie, but be that as it may, I think the movie's kind of guilty of, you know, vying for audience sympathy too much. I mean, I always have a trouble with children in peril. It's a low-hanging fruit. It's very easy to kind of get the audience engaged by, you know, appealing to, you know, the death of a child or so forth. So I kind of thought it kind of played a little bit below the belt in that regard. It really milks that whole situation with, you know, Perrin dealing with her daughter being murdered. But be that as it may, I think it and then it kind of uses the current war on terrorism in the U.S. as the backdrop for some of the events which were played out differently in the Argentinian movie. So that's done reasonably well as well. I think some of the twists and turns are reasonably well handled. So over, you know, not a bad adaptation at all.
It's being panned on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's reviewed badly, and I wonder if some of that may be due to the weight of expectations because the original was so
right
well received. And does it mix up any of the plot twists? I mean, I think when you're doing a remake, is if it's a frame by frame,
no, it's
blow
not.
By blow remake,
it's
then
not.
It doesn't sound
no. And I think the actual, and you guys should watch it. I think it's a good thriller. If you haven't read there's really some good twists and turns here. But the original movie ends at a particular point towards the end of the movie. This movie goes there and then pulls it a little bit further.
Mm.
And, you know, I think part of me says that it's because, you know, our Hollywood, our American audiences would not be happy with that. They would kind of want a bigger closure. And so it kind of ties it up a little bit too neatly. Mm. And so kind of that,
the edge goes away.
Well, not just that. The previous movie was so morally vague. This one kind of becomes a little bit morally self-righteous. So, but it still plays with a lot of issues of, you know, the movie Prisoners last year.
I love that.
You know, which plays with, if something horrible has happened to you, does that justify you from doing something else really horrible? So it plays with all of those things. Both the movies, but this one in particular, plays a lot with conveniences and, you know, like what do I want to say, like gosh, that word is totally evading me, but there's a scene where they know that the killer is going to be in this football stadium, right? It's a giant football stadium where this whole match is being played, and sure enough they find him. Come on, what are the chances you're going to find some person
right.
in a football stadium, you know?
Right.
And, you know, they don't find him until they do, you know. So there's too many coincidences.
Yeah.
Contrivances and coincidences.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, I think within its own little universe, it's effective. Plus, it gives an opportunity for Julia Roberts to play completely against type, to Attila Jaffor to kind of play something different. I'm glad that, you know, this is a race blind kind of casting. You know, this character did not have to be, you know, of a different ethnicity, but, you know, Ejiofor was hired for this role, which is great.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, it's an acting powerhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, are they good performances?
There are good performances. I think.
Do you think it'll get Oscar love?
No, it won't get Oscar love. And I think the movie kind of plays to Nicole Kidman's a good actor, but there's something it's too much for her to carry. And there's one particular aspect of the movie that I didn't buy at all, and it has to do with Ejiofor and Kidman. But
do you think it'll pick up any of the Globes type, you know, the best ensemble cast type awards?
It might. I mean, Julia Roberts is completely de-glammed. I mean, there's a line that somebody utters at the very end. Julia Roberts asks Chiwetel Ejiofor, what I did, was it right? And he looks at her and he says, I don't know, you look about a million years old. Which is kind of brave for Julia Roberts mm-hmm. to be a character who looks really old through the weight of everything that's happened to her. So anyway. But anyway, I would recommend this movie if you're looking for things to do at Netflix. Late at night or at the back of a plane. I think the inherent reveals and twists are reasonably well maintained.
Score?
6 out of 10.
Hmm.
Which is stingy, 6.5.
Well, yeah. No, you're not allowed a half.
Six out of ten.
All right, let's wrap it up.
I'd love to count how many times Yazdi uses half in all the shows.
I used an 8.
I try and call him on it when I can, but don't always get away with that. So, let's wrap it up for today. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Do reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of our Netflix picks. Let us know if you're listening.
If you have any Netflix picks.
And, yeah, that would be great.
If you have a suggestion
for something that we haven't already mentioned, then do send it in. Until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.